모두 짝이 내리다 잡지 투상 공부 시랍 공니 공동 프로그램은요.
So Rinpoche wishes everyone a tashi delay this evening, and he also makes the aspiration that all of our wisdom, which results from listening to the Dharma, reflecting on the Dharma, and meditating on the Dharma, will increase and increase. So Rinpoche asks that as before, we give rise to the precious motivation of bodhicitta, of the awakening mind, of the great vehicle. So as last night, as he did last night, tonight Rinpoche will give the reading transmission and some explanation of the section from this treasury of knowledge called Gaining Certainty about the Two Truths. So he'll give the reading transmission and some explanation from that. Yeah. It starts in the English on page 60. No? Before that, no?
To where?
49.
Bemba ni je number ya number ya bala ni keban sam jawa da keban ngo so tangbu ne tamju demba ni la tene song hisaba song de de yin che pe tambu chu je go mo chi ni chi demba tam de demba ni la yan da ba tene song de yab se jar ba le jik te in che be yin la ma se ba demba de ni ni je ta ba de ka ye kun so te yin ta da de demba so ba ka ya ma ji so che so be ji san da ne
So this section on the two truths has two different sections. The first one is called a connecting statement that identifies the topic to be explained, meaning a statement that puts it in context with what has come before. And then the second section is the actual explanation. So from the first one, the connecting statement itself from the root text is the teachings of the genuine Dharma are based on the two truths. And the commentary reads, all of the multitude of the thus gone one's teachings of the genuine Dharma rest perfectly on the two truths as their base. As it says in the Sutra of the Father Meeting the Son, the knower of the world, the Buddha, did not listen to other teachers. He teaches by employing the two truths. There is that which is relative truth and that which is ultimate truth and no third one at all. So these two truths are the relative truth, the truth of apparent reality, the truth of the way things seem, and ultimate truth, the truth of the way things actually are. In accordance with this statement, the Noble Nagarjuna states, the Dharma taught by the Buddhas is perfectly based on the two truths, the worldly relative truth and the genuine ultimate truth.
Rabdi Munzei Mandava Mangyang, Jer Tikin Banam Yepe, Kunzor Damba, Jushin Dota Batang, Dundan Damba, Majushin Dro Matabina, Sedra Trumta Mava Namje, Zemo Tanjur Belog Tana, Oman Jokale, Mukon Yanda, Zumbar and Tonga Yen, Munying O Yin and Zebanjo, Yanda, Tonger Kangde, Tenite, Tonga Zumba, Kunzor Damba Song Hibe. Zog ne nam chen je par je chu nam re re ang rang yin nam ngô nyi nyi sun zhen par mek te de tar se pa nam je ma ta ma che pa rang gan chu pa li nye pe ngô gang yin pa tang pak pa nam je nyam jia nam par ma to pi yi ji nye pa ngô gang yin pa wo te nye je nga ma nu kun zub je ten pa hi sa te ma re Marek pa te kona nyi, marek pe te kona nyi thoma la drepe na kunzob ji sa te. Te denbar zongkin, te kona nyi je thoma ma to pardo, zongwa tar thoma se chen, seba nam je, seba nam la mlob se denba ke sa wo. Te ke to yang te nyi le, no man jo pa le. Marek rangin, desar kunzob te te ka cho ma denbar nang dene. Kunzob den yi toba te son de jumar jubi unu kunzob hi son beso. Sema ne tongon tanpa denba hi sa de. Papa nyamja nambar madobi ye hi ne ne lok cheta varan jokpe na tamba hi sa la. Te yordo jubi na tongon tang. Namba tamje do mulove denba inba se ro.
The first section encapsulates or describes the essence of what the two truths are all about. And so this is called the section entitled The Two Truths' Essential Nature. So it says, generally, the essential nature of the two truths is that one is fabricated and the other is unfabricated. One is imputed or imagined by ordinary minds, and the other is the actuality engaged in by the meditative equipoise of the noble ones. And the commentary reads, the various tenets have many different ways of positing and identifying the essential nature of the two truths. In general, however, all followers of the great vehicle of the Mahayana assert that the relative truth is fabricated and superimposed onto genuine reality, while the ultimate truth is not fabricated and involves no superimposition. So that means that basically the relative truth is something made up, something contrived, something fabricated by the minds of ordinary individuals, ordinary beings, and then superimposed, like put onto reality. There is this reality which is true, and then what we do is we take some our thoughts, we take what we think is true, and we put it on top of that genuine reality. So we literally, it's called superimposed, like that. And so, Tamasan.
Yeah.
So, from amongst the various tenets, the consequence school makes the highest presentation of the two truths. The consequence school's view will be described later on, but now we just get the name of it here. And Lodru Thaya says that they make the highest presentation in terms of distinguishing between what the relative truth is and what the ultimate truth is. And their leading proponent was Chandrakirti, a great Indian master. And so Lodru Thaya quotes from Chandrakirti's text called The Entrance to the Middle Way. And in that text it says, by seeing correctly or incorrectly, two natures of every entity are apprehended. The object seen correctly is the ultimate, and that seen falsely is the relative. So the Buddha said. So, and then Lodru Thaya gives a little explanation of what that means. Therefore, from the perspective of how they are apprehended, all phenomena, from form through omniscience of the Buddha, have two natures or characters. All phenomena have two natures or characters. These two natures are, first, that which is found by the minds of the immature, which neither examine nor analyze, and are merely left to their own devices. And second, that which is found by the non-conceptual primordial awareness of the noble ones in meditative equipoise. So the relative truth is what the ordinary beings who don't analyze, who fabricate everything, and whose minds are just left to their own devices. That's what we see. And the ultimate truth, which is unfabricated, which involves no superimposition, which perceives genuine reality just as it is, who sees that? It's seen in the non-conceptual primordial awareness of the bodhisattvas, of the noble ones, who have attained direct insight, direct realization of emptiness in their meditation. The first of the two, relative truth, literally has two components to it. These two components are all obstructing and truth. Now, this comes from the Tibetan word for relative truth, which is kunzop denpa. And tsop means to block, to obstruct, to cover up in a deceiving way, in a deceitful way. And kun means all. So kunzop together means all obstructing. Completely false is another translation of it. And then denpa means truth. So we have these three components, all obstructing and truth, kunzop denpa. And then Bodhutai explains what these terms mean. It is called all obstructing because ignorance obscures the seeing of suchness, of the ultimate truth. It is called truth because until they realize suchness, the immature perceive it to be true, and it functions in accordance with how it is perceived. So, in other words, we think that what we see here is true, and it does perform a function. This cup, which we think is true, performs the function of holding water in a reliable way for us. So in that sense, it is true. But in the sense that it is not the ultimate truth, it's called all obstructing. So there are these two components to it. As it further says in The Entrance to the Middle Way by Chandrakirti, ignorance obscures the true nature, so it is all obstructing. Because of ignorance, that which is fabricated appears to be true, so it is true. This is why the capable one, the Buddha, called it all obstructing or relative truth. And since it is said like that, that is how it is. The latter, ultimate truth, literally has three components to it: genuine, actuality, and truth. The Tibetan word for ultimate truth is dundam denpa. And Lodutai describes it slightly out of order. Genuine is dampa. Actuality is, in Tibetan, dun. And truth is, again, denpa. So we have these three components, dun, dam, denpa. And that's what they mean in English. Normally it's translated as ultimate truth or absolute truth, something like that. So we just followed that general usage here. The non-conceptual primordial awareness of the noble ones in meditative equipoise engages in the true nature just as it is, so it is called genuine. The sphere of experience of the noble ones' primordial awareness is the actuality. So we have these two things here, the subject and the object. The subject, which is the bodhisattva, the noble bodhisattva, their primordial awareness perceives in a genuine way, in an unmistaken way. The object of perception is the true nature of things, the actuality, the reality, just as it is. And so it's described like that, although really it's non-dualistic. There is no subject and object when they're perceiving this. But in order to explain it, it's broken down like that. But in terms of the actual meditative experience, there's no dualistic experience or thought of there being some object and some subject. When there is that, that's still the relative truth. And since the ultimate is undeceiving, in all aspects, it is called truth.
That's all. Kela sini jingi be kunzob ji sabdra yanda drabatang chokwam drabatang dam thani tang kunje batang zumba jinlin jokpar ke batang bota na yang da per yin tonda den ba drabar se ba nyumong jin je marik pa na kunzob ji sa ke Ti kanza ti jui wang sepe, ti wang tu sunwe, tsema kanga, duze ji chu, nama tenu kunzub ji tenbe, ter takwa te, jokwa le, oman jokwa le. Marik rangin depsir kunzub te, hiso hieto, nipa ne, chokwa te da, dongkem tar, jik le jik tu ne truba inje, ngo ni je ma inbe kunzub ji sa, sunba ne dreba tiksar le, yang na kunzob ne da de jikten je tani ki sa ba ta ze ko yang na jwe ba da jwe za da hi ba da hi za lo so ba tenye ki no hi so ye ba ne to ge mbar wa le zo la so ba kun ngo bo kun na bar je ba to je na kunzob te ki so nga ba ne ke mu zo ba to je kunzob te lo bon sing ge zam bu na bar je ba pong mu zo pe na kunzob ki he ba ta ro Kikyu tundan tenpa kibbe, tamba ngunan phajyu jinyam yaa ki yinan. Tungne ti chuyur du churpe tungpa nyitang, tenpa kibba tenyi namba tamche du mulubhe teke du yaadu. Tamba ti jisun tuba nirikhi jiba. Tungne ti chuyur du churpe mega gansinyi chinji tungpa nyi, tenpa kibba ta kin kibbe rikpa ngur mulubhe teke du Teke to yakpan dote, saman de la jinten bang namrang pe tuyendang tenpa ki serte. Ome tenju namso, denyi ji jepan yukpa tamjen de kona la sepa yinji tuyendang, tuyendang pe tenpa nguyla ne kundo ke jepa sarmi do. Tanyi do tuyendang, Tung tapa nyi yueba tang, te nyi jen, si nyi chang, sarwar toki barwa le song so.
The next section, I don't think I read this at the beginning of the last time, but in the second section, which is the actual explanation after we had the contextual statement, there are five parts. The first part was this description of the essential nature of the two truths. The second part, which we're about to hear, is about their etymology. The third part is about the two truths' characteristics and synonyms for them. The fourth part is a full classification of the two truths. And the fifth is the purpose for knowing the two truths. So now we get to this section on the etymology of the two truths, which means being certain about the words, being more certain about what these words mean in these terms. Kunzob Denpa, relative truth, truth of apparent reality, and Dundam Denpa, the ultimate truth. So, the root verses read, their etymology. The composite are true as the all-obstructing, or relative, and the other one is true as the genuine actuality, or ultimate. And the commentary. The etymology of the terminology of the two truths is as follows. By being certain about the combination rules of Sanskrit, the term relative or all-obstructing is derived. Well, in Sanskrit, the word for relative truth is samvriti satya. And Lodhutai is talking about how this term is derived from Sanskrit into Tibetan. And so it basically means the same thing. Sam in Sanskrit means all. Vri comes from a verb meaning to cover. So that's this kunsop, all covered up. And satya means truth. And so from that word, we get kunsop denpa in Tibetan, and then we get the English translation of the truth of apparent reality or relative truth. And this term has five different connotations, this term relative truth. And the five are, number one is it obscures the perfect. Number two is it is a dependent collection or it is composite. Number three is it is a symbol or convention. Number four, it is thoroughly divided. And number five is it is a false mask. And so then these five are explained in a little bit more detail. The first one is it obscures the perfect. That which obscures the perfect, true nature, the ultimate truth, and which is the disturbing emotion, the klesha, of ignorance, is called all-obstructing. to valid cognition in the mind stream of an individual under the influence of ignorance, composite phenomena appear. Well, what does that mean? That means that a person or an ordinary being like us has valid cognition. What valid cognition means here is that things appear to our senses, to our eyes, ears, nose, taste, and touch senses. And they just appear as objects, and we perceive them in a valid way when it seems like if you look at the blue sky and you see a blue sky, or if you look at a cup, you see cup, as opposed to if you look at a white mountain, you see yellow or something like that. That's invalid. That's not valid cognition. But valid cognition is just how we perceive objects in everyday life. And to that cognition, composite phenomena appear. So all of these things which are constructed, which are made of different things, appear to us. These are true as being all obstructing or relative, and are therefore called as such. The entrance to the middle way says, ignorance obscures the true nature, so it is all obstructing. Then the second one is called dependent collection. And it says that the relative is a collection where it and its parts exist in dependence on each other, like a pole tent. So this is describing like a tent that they used to make where they stuck spears in the ground and threw some cloth over it. And so the tent depends on the spears, and also the spears to hold them up depend on each other. So without one thing, like we were talking about a little bit last night, without one idea, the other ideas all fall apart. So that's what the relative is. It's like this house of cards. It's like a pole tent. You take out one thing and the whole thing falls down. None of it has any inherent or independent reality by itself. It's a dependent collection. So because it's like that, it has no essential nature, and so it is called relative. Relative here means from one perspective, like from a relative perspective. From my perspective is one relative perspective. From yours is another relative perspective. Everybody has their own perspective. None of them is objective. They're all completely subjective. So then the third one is symbol or convention. And in another text, called the Clearly Worded, which is a commentary on a text by Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti says that relative means the symbols, words, and conventions used in the world. Alternatively, it is expression and the objects of expression, consciousness and the objects of consciousness, and so forth. It has these characteristics. So all the words, all the signs, all the symbols we have for things, all the names we give things, that's what the relative truth is. It's just names. It's just thoughts. That's what it is. Thoroughly divided is number four. And in a text called The Blaze of Reasoning, Baba Viveka, who is another Indian master, states that relative means the total and complete classification of entities, such as form and so forth. So that means that what we do in the relative, in apparent reality, is we give specific characteristics to everything. We thoroughly define everything. We thoroughly distinguish everything. We say this is different from this, down to the last detail. And that's a characteristic of the relative truth. The fifth characteristic is that it is a false mask. The relative is that which cannot withstand analysis. The master of learning, Hari Bhadra, says, since it cannot withstand the forces of thorough analysis, it is relative. So it's like a mask that somebody wears. And you can look at it and you might think, oh, that's somebody, you know, somebody's wearing a mask, so you might think the mask is who they are. But as soon as you look a little bit more closely, you see that's not really who they are. That's just a mask. It's not real. It just is an appearance. You investigate it, you analyze it, and you can see through it. So that's the point of this fifth one. And then we get to the etymology of the ultimate truth. So the other is called the ultimate truth, or the actual genuine truth. The genuineness is the primordial awareness of the stream of being of a noble one in meditative equipoise, pretty much the same as before. And again, the actuality is the emptiness that is primordial awareness's sphere of experience. And this emptiness has no divisions. It has no thoughts thinking it is this or this or divided like this. It's just reality as it is, beyond any conceptual thinking. So that's the way that it's distinguished from the relative. The truth is the quality of being undeceiving in all aspects. And then we get to something called the approximate ultimate truth, or the enumerated ultimate truth. And the reason why this is distinguished out is because this is talking about when we discuss ultimate truth. When we discuss ultimate truth, it's not the real ultimate truth, because the real ultimate truth is beyond expression, but still we have to talk about it to find out what it is. And so that is called the approximate or the enumerated, enumerated meaning spoken about ultimate truth. And so then Lodratai defines that, and he says, what approximates the genuine, so in each term has an approximation for it. There was the actual genuine, the actual actuality, and the actual truth for the real ultimate truth, and then we get to the enumerated, and each term again is defined slightly differently. So what approximates the genuine is the mind that has realized emptiness through inference, through reasoning. So in order to understand emptiness, we have to think about it first, basically. Otherwise, you have no idea of what it is. And the mind that understands after reasoning, after thinking about it, through inference about what is emptiness, that is said to approximate the genuineness of the ultimate truth. What approximates the actuality, or what approximates the object, is the object that is the inferential mind's sphere of experience, the emptiness that has the characteristic of being a non-affirming negation. And what is a non-affirming negation? A non-affirming negation means you say no and you don't imply yes about anything. So, for example, if you say in this room there is no snake, you're not implying that there is anything else there. You're not saying that there is something else in this room. You're just saying that there's no snake. And similarly, with emptiness, you say there is no inherent existence, but you don't imply that there is something else out there. You don't imply that there is some other type of thing, because that would again be a concept. So in that sense, emptiness, the mind that thinks about emptiness, is said to perceive emptiness as a non-affirming negation, as opposed to an affirming negation, as opposed to saying no and implying something else. When emptiness says no, it's no. There's not something else there that we're thinking about. We just leave it like that. What approximates the truth is the quality of being undeceiving in the face of the reasoning mind's examination and analysis. So basically, you examine, you find it to be certain, you find it to be true. You eliminate your doubts. Once you have done that, then there is this truth, there is this quality of being undeceiving in the face of your having analyzed and having thought about it. So this is called the approximating or the enumerated ultimate truth. In all the analyses found in the Middle Way commentaries on the two truths, the only debates are over what constitutes the enumerated ultimate truth, because the actual ultimate truth cannot be analyzed by conceptual mind. So when they debate, they're talking about in terms. You can't debate about what is the ultimate truth, because it is what it is, and our concepts couldn't change that or even reach it. So when we debate, or when we analyze these different schools of thought, it's all in the sense of this reasoning consciousness, in this reasoning mind. And so that's the enumerated ultimate truth. And then there's a slight change in the book here, if you're following along, but not too big. It says, the existence in conventional terms of these two types of ultimate truths, along with their characteristics, are clearly explained in The Blaze of Reasoning. This text by Bhava Viveka explains how where it talks about how in conventional terms, in terms of our thoughts, there can be these two ultimate truths, the approximating and the actual ultimate truth. But really, there can't be. There's only one. But when we think about it, when we reason about it, we can distinguish these two. And the characteristics of these two, which Lodratai has talked about briefly, are discussed in this text.
Listen. Mantur mpakpa yor te lomilo, yor jin jin tang tor tang mantur lo, te da mingi namdang mangbu ting hi sabha songde. Denpa nipo teni, so sun teni ne, dro takpa am juma ngowo, thongma zunpa ma je sipi hi ngore nyepe nyedong, kunzor denpa teni tang. Dro ma takpa am ma jupe ngowo, thongwa yang takpa mpakpa, Ringo Patsab je se je to marza sanzong je ma je trupi hiyor kunzo te mantor pak pe hiyor tada yin ki kang ke ba yin de na yo lun trupa tan je chang trukhi so yok pa mang hing te ta na rikhi je ba chang yimu de ne ki hi yin be de je ser ma je Kipe Dajaro. Onjang come there, your Jedenzin, Lum Lola Sichen. Your change Denzin and Zindang Manturba than Trubala Sebau. Teda Ming and Namdang, Trumta Susi gave a hint of monkey. Umelogdana, Untale, Tongba Nin and Dordona, Tegin Yedan Danta, Tema Midan Tendantan. Chuji ying na nam dang so. Yemen sinja malo yin chi dang. Pakpa chordi ti ji sun dang ne nam dang chukik du khe ba dang. Lopong dawe chang nam dang mang du khe chen. Tele dokpa na kunzup de be menge nam dang sun jo la. Yin yang. Della da sam dang, main sam dang, takpa sam dang, tani sam hisawa la so chang jodo. Ya.
Tinakashi kalakabu yina shagna digirin.
Ah. Yana digiri yana digi jan digiri.
Nasa. Then we get to the section which describes the two truths' characteristics and synonyms for them. And so the root text reads, their characteristics are, one is the object of non-analytical, confused consciousness, and the other is the object of the unconfused awareness of the noble ones. And again, they are either the object that is either deceiving or undeceiving, and the subject whose mode of perception is either confused or unconfused. They are taught to have many synonyms. The characteristics of relative truth and ultimate truth are as follows. The defining characteristic of relative truth is that it is that object found by the non-analytical minds of the immature. It is the nature that is fabricated and superimposed onto true reality and that is seen falsely. The defining characteristic of ultimate truth is that it is the actuality found by the awareness of the noble ones. It is the nature that is neither fabricated nor superimposed onto true reality, and that is seen perfectly. And then there comes a section which is quite complicated, so we're going to skip over that and go down to the bottom of page 58, down to the synonyms. So concerning the synonyms for relative truth and ultimate truth, there is an incredible number of them found in the assertions of the various tenets. If one looks at the tradition of the middle way's explanation, though, in a text by Maitreya called Distinguishing the Middle from the Extremes, it says, emptiness is in short, so it gives some synonyms for ultimate truth or emptiness, thusness, the genuine limit, signlessness, the ultimate, and the expanse of qualities. These are its synonyms. It is unchanging and unmistaken. So, we can talk about these very briefly. Thusness refers to that just how it is. Reality just as it is. Without any superimposition, without any contrivance, it is just as it is. Thusness, or suchness. The genuine limit. The genuine limit refers to the fact that once you perceive the ultimate truth directly in your meditation, you can't go any further. You've reached the limit, you've reached the summit of understanding. Then signlessness. Signlessness means that just as the relative truth is composed of all these different signs and symbols and thoughts and terms and all of these things, ultimately none of those are true. It's beyond our conceptual ability to describe it with any kind of sign. So in that sense, it's called signless. And then the last one is, the, is or the The second to last is the ultimate. And the last is the expanse of qualities. The expanse of qualities refers to the Dharma Dhatu, and it refers to the fact that once you directly perceive the ultimate truth, then all of the qualities of the bodhisattvas, which are their limitless compassion and their ability to appear in many different places at the same time, and their different powers that they have to perform miracles, all of these naturally manifest. So in that sense, the ultimate truth is the expanse of qualities. It's not a mere emptiness or a vacuum. It's not a nothingness. It's beyond our ability to conceive of it, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't have its own inherent qualities. It does. These are its synonyms. It is unchanging and unmistaken. Furthermore, the noble Drolde, who is another scholar, explains that in the sutras, there are 11 different names for ultimate truth, and Chandrakirti lists many different names himself. So that's about the ultimate. If one reverses the names listed above, one derives the synonyms for relative truth. So the relative truth is just the opposite of everything that we just said. Or you could also call it names only, merely imaginary, conventions only, and so forth. Those are all different ways you can describe the relative. It's just a name. It's just a thought. It's not anything more than that.
Yeba rab de yeba la nga yeba ngu yeba jun tin ni je tang ni che kam tha de tum da so sun do so lo dang bu la ni che yeba dang se da de yeba wo dang bu ni che yeba ni ye ge ma je che sa san je ten na lo ne lo kun zo dun dan ye che sa ba song de che kun zo Jer kunzob ringu hiza tang dun dun chungu hiza mayin yang ma se par ma ta ma che bungor hiza tam de deni ji yegi ni dun dole song de jike do hibar sava la denba ni bunda tam do se do hiso beso de la oma tava kirable Jikten kunzo denba tan tambe tonje denba o heba tar suju kunzo je denba da lume tonda je denba ni sam yangna nalok tan ne lok je go ni kunzo tan tondam je denba ni su ye o de la wo chong
na sa The next section is the fourth in this actual explanation, and it's called Thoroughly Distinguishing the Two Truths, and it itself has five different parts. So I won't read them all right now. The first one is called the distinction between the two truths. How do we distinguish between the two truths? And it has two parts itself. The first one is the general distinction between the two truths, and the second is a more detailed distinction. In other words, this is starting out making a distinction between the two truths and then within the two truths making more distinctions. And some schools do this, and so Lodu Thai presents what they have to say. So the first section says, the root text says, when there is no analysis, merely that which is known is the basis of distinction between the two truths. The way things appear and the true nature are distinguished as the relative truth and the ultimate truth, respectively. So basically we have this generality. It's everything that is known. And everything that is known is divided into the two truths, the ultimate and the relative. But that's only from the perspective of not analyzing, because if you analyze, then you find out that what is known by the ultimate, by the mind of the noble bodhisattvas, and what is known by us are different things. And so in a sense, this generality doesn't really exist because these two things are completely different. But it's okay just on a superficial level to say, and it does say in the sutras, that everything that is known is included in just the two truths. So that's just sort of an introduction to this. And then he also says that in the Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way by Nagarjuna, it says worldly relative truth, genuine ultimate truth. Again, just a sort of introduction. And so like that, deceiving phenomena are the relative truth, and the undeceiving is the ultimate truth. Alternatively, from the perspective of there being the way things appear and the true nature, there are the relative and the ultimate truths, respectively. So there are these two nice words in Tibetan, nang tsul and ne tsul. Nang means appearance, and tsul means manner. So that first one is the way things appear, the way things look to us. The second term is ne tsul. Ne means the way they are. It means their true way. Tsul again means way. So it's the way things appear, that's the relative truth. The way things really are is the ultimate truth.
Nyepa susu yeba ne. Na long troban rolu na wa te mantra landan rewar parche ye. Kenpa jikte nanjur kunzor tang dandang ngu yermin sinyi som. Chujin goni chudok susu ye kipa te. Nanlok layang turpa tam manturpa nanlok nile tangpo nanlok turpa ne rolor turnang turnzin turki zikharwa jenyeba te lupa tam medenbe nyerwa ne sanje je par samjo da nante loye rumita kwa yinbe donla marekbe sen turpa rike to Deyang yungwa yeso nang la tenzi nubha yang tabu kunzo. Dawa ni nang tabu tong la nang la tenzi munubha lopu kunzo dunjo. Mantur bu kunzo la yangi. Deva la mantur wa lamji yiki yuantin da jeba gong dunjo we. Meta jang hi je sar drupa la tu na mandur vata. Deva tupe mandur vata sanje ji ki zukata che pa ume na yupa te. Te da pache rang uma rangji pe ye chen. Te yang long de yanda kunzup ye pa na. Chuntong ke jo je zukta son zimpe wangpu ngon som nam rang ke Ranga Nayar La Mandurban de Bawangiina Tanjurpe ne Heba de Nam Ranga Nayar Lang Turban de Besser Yanda Kunzo Mijijen Kunzo Vina Lopar Kelijen Ranga Rangan Sinija Turban do Mundoja de la Tupa Ibe Travet Neijin Sinija Samanam Songso Yangna Chempake Sosu Chevo Dham Phapa Chempa Ka Kunzo Nyesan Jorde Tangpo Ne Chota Tang Dranyi La Sokpa Sokpa Te Teta Ne Dzunpa Da Luvi Chuchin Do Sipa Namje Chang Yonsu Choyopar Sipa Saro Nyepa Ne Sipa Namje Ngonpar Khenpe Zogda La Sokpa Te Teta Ne Phakpe Chun Tongwa Namje Juma Khen Do Sotang Soptang Nyingpo Mepar Kongdu Chupa Saro Yang nan jikten pe kunzop ta nanjur pe kunzop ni so yang yevar song te kheba le nanjur kunzop ni mi te khe ta patin dawe namdun chi mi kang te chetavur yo chi namjur pe de yo mini chi song so senye na mata ma je pe chungu chu chin rakpa nam ne jikten pe kunzop chungze chi ngui thani pe Lu ni don travel matapata, Nirang Malopa, Nirang Malopani, Sampa Minche, Jimpakbe Jitobje, Nawa Nam, Nanjur Pekunzo, Menga Namdang Yang Namala, Takpetang, Sipetang, Rikitang, Mandar Pekunzo Chisala, Semala, Jepetang, Pakbe Rikitang, Rikitang Devetang, Oma pe kunzop je sao, kam deye lokpa ta yanda kunzop ni ne, jikten pa ta sa yi se denpa nisun jokpa yang yinu. Tong tampe denpa la na ngovu goni yewa jer mi de, namka tar kundo ro chikpa se ta, thanyi ji yolen de epe se de, kuncho chikpa le gelong ta, denpa tampa denen da da de. Denpa tamba tamba dene jikten da da de Mulubi Tongba Nidang, Tema Meba, the Mumba Meba Somde, Namtar Go Somam, Mumba Doma Zedan Yo, Chujin Goni Yena, Yena, Tongba Ni, Jodokte, Jodokte, Sokong, Jorge, the Nikosos Yavaino. Yeah.
So then the next section is called the particulars of a detailed distinction between the two truths. And what this section is going to look at is, okay, we've divided between the relative truth and the ultimate truth. Now, what if we look at each of these respectively? What if we look inside the relative truth and see what kinds of divisions we can make inside the ultimate truth and see what kind of divisions there are? And this is done particularly by one the first level school of the middle way reasoning is called the autonomy school. And they were interested in making divisions in the relative truth, in saying that there is a confused relative truth and also an unconfused relative truth. And they also do a little bit in the ultimate truth too. Now, the more subtle school of middle way reasoning rejects these distinctions. And so it's interesting to see first what these are and then the reasons for them, and there are good reasons, but then also the reasons why it is that ultimately, or in the final analysis, we leave these distinctions behind too. So we'll just go through this slowly and take it one step at a time. So we're talking about the relative truth, and we're talking about the different kinds of relative truth there might be. So it says, within the way things appear, there are also two: the confused way things appear and the unconfused way things appear. So this is in the relative truth. First, the confused way things appear is whatever arises in the minds of beings as differences in thought and expression that arise from the time one is in the hell realms until Buddhahood is attained are just pictures drawn by the mind and superimposed onto true reality. There is therefore ignorance of true reality, and so these three are explained to be confused. So this confused relative truth is basically, this has the same definition of relative truth that we had before. And within this confused way things appear, again, there are two distinctions. There is the correct relative, which consists of appearances that can perform a function, like the four elements and so forth, earth, air, fire, and water, and the wrong relative, which consists of appearances that cannot perform a function, like the appearance of two moons to a person who has a finger stuck in their eye. So what this is saying is basically, within this confused relative truth, there is still, you can say, some things are correct, like this cup performs a function, like this pencil performs a function. It does something. Whereas if you have a dream of a pencil, or if you have a dream of a cup, or if you stick your finger in your eye and you see two moons, then those things don't do anything. Okay? So this distinction is made. So that's the confused relative. And then we get to this other thing, which is the unconfused relative, they say. So there are also two distinctions. First, there is the primordial awareness of the path together with its qualities, and that is unconfused about the fruition. So along the way that you're progressing, once you become a bodhisattva, a noble bodhisattva, and directly realize emptiness, you have meditation. And your meditation continues to see the ultimate truth in a broader and broader and broader way. It's compared to like seeing the ocean. First you see the ocean directly. Well, first when you're studying, you just read about the ocean. Then you go to the ocean and you see it directly. That's like realizing emptiness directly for the first time. But then you can go up in a, like a lighthouse and see the ocean. And then you can go above the earth and see the ocean and see the whole thing. So it's like that. You get a broader and broader, you get a deeper and deeper understanding of the ultimate truth as one progresses. So this is unconfused in the sense that it's a direct realization of emptiness, so it's unconfused. But it changes, so it's impermanent. So in that sense, it's relative, because it has this quality of impermanence to it. It has this quality of not being the ultimate realization of the Buddha. And so in that sense, it's said to be relative. The second is the unconfused relative that arises from the attainment of the fruition, which is basically talking about the form of the Buddha that is seen by these bodhisattvas when they can go to the Pure Lands and see the Buddha that we can't see. So when they see that form of the Buddha, then that is called, that is also called the unconfused relative truth. And then Lodrotaya says that the above are mostly the assertions of the autonomy school, which is what we said before. Moreover, the autonomy school's positing of correct relative truth comes out of its assertion that the direct valid cognition of the senses of an ordinary being perceiving form, sound, and so forth are unmistaken in regard to each sense faculty's own appearing object. So this middle way school still holds on a little bit to the relative truth. They're still holding on to it and saying, well, it's not completely wrong. Because if you perceive something and it can perform a function in the way that you perceive it, then it has this aspect of correctness to it. So it's progressing in degrees of subtlety in that sense. But then we get to the view of the consequence school, which is a little bit more profound, and it says that since the consequence school asserts that these sense consciousnesses are confused even in regard to their own appearing objects, it does not posit the existence of a correct relative truth. According to the consequence school, if it is relative, it is wrong and misleading. So for the consequence school, they don't distinguish between the appearance of a cup in the daytime and the appearance of a cup in a dream. They're both equally wrong. And basically it's because you can't say that just because you perceive it with your eyes that this cup is something unmistaken. Because what shows that your eyes are unmistaken? You know, the only way you can show that your eyes are unmistaken is that they perceive this cup. So it's circular. And so it can't really establish it. And so that's why they say that that's just wrong. Furthermore, the consequence school's followers state that their refusal to assert, as the autonomy school's followers do, that relatively the true existence of entities is established by their own characteristics is the main point of collision between the two schools. This point is very subtle, they say. So again, the autonomy school says that, for example, fire has these characteristics of being hot and burning. And so therefore, it is something truly existent in a relative sense. Ultimately, they say it doesn't exist. But relatively, it has some true existence because it's hot, and if you put your hand in it, you burn yourself. But the consequence school doesn't agree with that. They say the whole thing is just a big dream. The whole thing is just an illusion. And so they're a progression in that sense. So then we get to another way of distinguishing, which is basically making the same distinction, but it's using different terms. And since it's used a lot in the text, Lodrotaya describes it. And so he says there is the relative truth for ordinary beings and the relative truth for noble beings. The first are what even the immature can understand to be false and deceiving appearances, such as the moon's appearance in a pool of water, and so forth. So the relative truth for ordinary beings, according to this distinction, is what even we can understand are wrong, like a moon appearing in the pool of water. Everybody knows there's no moon there. Everybody knows a dream appearance or an echo is not real. Everybody knows that. But the second, which is the relative truth for noble beings, are the forms, sounds, and so forth, which the immature are greatly attached to as being real. The noble ones who see true reality, thoroughly understand these to be hollow, fake, and to have no essence, like magicians' illusions. So this is again using this term all obstructing or false in this sense. And so ordinary beings, we know that echoes and things like that are false. But we don't know that everything else that we see is false. But the bodhisattvas do know that. And so that's their relative truth. That's what they see through, which we don't. And so that distinction is made. And again, in addition to the above, there is the division into the worldly relative truth and the yogic relative truth. These two are basically the same as before. The worldly relative truth is the relative truth for ordinary beings. The yogic relative truth is the relative truth for yogis or for the noble beings. The illustrating examples for worldly relative truth, skipping to the top of 65, are the coarse phenomena that appear from the perspective of the confused non-analytical mind. The illustrating examples of yogic relative truth are the objects found by the conventional mind that has analyzed slightly, namely subtle impermanence and the appearances in post-meditation for those on the level of no more learning, on the levels of the hearers and the solitary realizers up through those on the levels of the noble bodhisattvas. So this is talking about the different, according to the different turnings of the wheel, there are different levels of realization. There are different levels of seeing through this mask. And when you see through this mask and you have an object that appears and you know is wrong, that's said to be the relative truth of the yogis. If you still cling to it, it's worldly relative truth. It's the relative truth of ordinary beings. Synonyms for worldly relative truth are the relative that has not been analyzed, that appears to the immature, and that is not connected with the reasoning minds of the noble ones. Synonyms for yogic relative truth are the relative that has been analyzed, that is connected with the reasoning minds of the noble ones, and that appears to practitioners of the middle way. What are here called wrong and correct relative truth are also referred to, respectively, as worldly relative truth and relative truth for those on the noble level. So this is going back a ways and just showing how these different terms are used to describe somewhat the same thing. And so that's the relative truth. Those are the different ways you can look at the relative truth, the different ways you can distinguish inside the relative truth. And then we get to the ultimate truth. And the first thing Lodru Thayi says is that the nature of ultimate truth cannot be differentiated because, like space, it is all of one taste and because it is beyond expression. So you can't make these kinds of distinctions because the ultimate truth is beyond our concepts. So how can we distinguish something like that? There's just nothing there to distinguish. There's no object of our concepts we can work with. In the Heap of Jewels Sutra, the Buddha said, "Ordained ones, there is just one ultimate truth. It is the transcendence of suffering that is undeceiving." So actually, we can't make any distinction between the ultimate truth. But if one differentiates types of ultimate truths merely through types of expression, or in other words, talking about the enumerated or the approximate ultimate truth that we were before, then there's one text called the Small Text on Truth, and it, for example, speaks of the enumerated and the unenumerated ultimate truths. So, again, from the perspective of thinking, we can describe these two different kinds of ultimate truth. The former is free from only one side of elaboration, such as is the case when one uses non-arising to refute arising. So, again, the enumerated truth, when you think about it, when you're using your reasoning consciousness and you say there is no arising, there is no birth really, and so that's still a thought. It's better than before when we believed in arising, but it still has this quality of being conceptual. And the latter, the non-enumerated ultimate truth, is free from all elaborations. And then if one distinguishes enumerated ultimate truths in terms of the objects they negate, so what are we talking about when we say there is no arising? What are we negating? There are the truth of the selflessness of the individual and the truth of the selflessness of phenomena. So there are these two things. The individual, we think there's an I, and phenomena, we think phenomena have some core substance, and so it is their true essence of these two things which are refuted. And then if one distinguishes in terms of characteristics, and this is just describing different ways you can talk about the ultimate truth, you can say that is emptiness, you can say that it is signlessness, you can say that it is wishlessness, you can say that it is uncompoundedness. And then again, there is a very thorough distinction talking about 16 or 18 different types of things which are empty, and you can also distinguish that way. But again, this is all looking at it from the perspective of our thoughts, from the perspective of looking at what are these things that are empty. And if we think about it, what kind of characteristics does ultimate truth have in contrast to relative truth? But ultimately, again, it's something non-conceptual, and actually it can't be distinguished at all. That's the main point here.
The second
section is one we've all been waiting for, which is the reason for differentiating the two truths. Why are we having this discussion in the first place? So it says, the root text says, there is a difference between the apprehension of noble beings and of immature beings. The two truths exist in dependence on each other, but not in actuality. So the reason for distinguishing the truths as two is that noble beings and immature beings apprehend reality differently. That's why we have these two truths, is because bodhisattvas see things differently from the way we do. And so that's why there are said to be these two truths. It is therefore from the perspective of there being different subjects that they are differentiated as two truths. So again, not from the side of the object, but from the perspective that there are different ways of viewing, there are different ways of seeing. One is the way of seeing directly the true nature, and the other is our confused perspective. And so it's from that perspective that there are two truths. But in actuality, they do not exist as two. Because if the relative existed in actuality, it would not be relative, it would be ultimate. So really, there aren't two truths. Why? Because if the relative truth were really there, then it would be the ultimate truth. And then there would be two ultimate truths, and that doesn't make sense. But then, Bodhutaya says, to conclude from this, that the relative does not exist in actuality, and that is the ultimate truth. In other words, if you say that the relative doesn't exist, that is the ultimate truth. That statement is the ultimate truth. That's wrong. Because relative truth and ultimate truth only exist in mutual dependence upon each other in the framework of a presentation where there is still clinging to true existence. So you can't say there is no relative truth, there is only ultimate truth. Because again, just like we saw last night, these two things only exist in dependence on each other. They're just creations of our thoughts. Relative truth is that which is not ultimate truth. Ultimate truth is that which is not relative truth. You just go back and forth. They just depend on each other. So therefore, the assertions that the actuality free from extremes is the ultimate truth and everything else is the relative truth are the words used by those who still cling to concepts. So if you go out and you proclaim this is the ultimate truth and everything else is the relative truth, again, you're not recognizing that you're still clinging to some ideas here. And so Lodutai says that our own middle way tradition, which again he's referring to the consequence school, which makes the highest presentation of this whole thing, our own middle way tradition, in contrast, does not posit any distinction whatsoever between the relative and ultimate truths. Because as long as one does not realize the actuality that cannot be expressed or asserted. As long as one does not realize the actuality that cannot be expressed, one is not even a practitioner of the middle way. One has not realized the true meaning of the middle way. So really there is no distinction, because the actuality that you realize is beyond all these distinctions, beyond all these concepts. It's important for us to go through these concepts and to understand them, because otherwise we'll never get to that realization which is beyond these concepts. But that doesn't mean that we should think that this is somehow a rigid, truly existent division, because it's not. It too is a creation, a product of the thinking mind. And that is the true meaning of the middle way. Lesson.
Sumba trangi ne, denpa ni sengi, sikye ngu me sekar. Heba te, denpa nu kunzup ta ton tamba, denpa ni su trangi pa yin te, langkar hikpa le, kunzup ta na ton ta te, jo le che pa sumba me. Kunzup tokwe takpa te, Tezen Paku Joyo Lokita Yavsen Jarvendole Teta Tev Yinke Kunzobdon Tonta Bani Toksu Chute Hibra Sawang Kunzobdon Tonta Bedemba Del Sedu Hida Rigwang Tapso Sover Sepe Landor La Kunzob Midam Ronghe Lanza Sovo Namdak Namda memekpa la ton tamba mido marongwe nyong nam mido khen te tsamje jivu ton tamje nrope maang mukubi sero yang na yurjin je lo ne trupa ta mandrupa nisu ngi khen te ngama la tu te kunzob ta sema la tu te ton tamje namja mido marongwe na denpa nisu ngi so.
So then the third section is the certainty that there are two truths. So this is talking about why there are two and not three or one or some other number. And the root text is quite straightforward. It just says there are definitely two truths. In the Travel to Lanka Sutra, it says there are the relative and the absolute, and there is no reason for a third. The relative is that which is imagined by thought. Its exhaustion, or the ultimate truth, the absolute truth, its exhaustion is the noble one's sphere of experience. So again, here's the difference. The relative is that which is imagined by thought. Everything that we think of, that's the relative truth. The exhaustion of all of that is the sphere of experience of the bodhisattvas. Then in the Sutra of the Meeting of the Father and the Son, it says, the thus gone one mastered in his mind the two, the relative and the ultimate. Everything to be known is included in the relative and the ultimate truths. Moreover, with regard to their relevance, with regard to the importance of there being these two truths as a teaching device, as a pedagogical device, it would be inappropriate for there to be no relative truth from the perspective of mainly the method of what to adopt and what to reject. So we need the relative truth. We need to talk about things as if they truly exist, because otherwise we don't know what to do. We would have no idea what to do in the world. We would have no idea of how to give up non-virtuous actions and how to adopt positive ones, virtuous ones. So we need this relative truth. And since the main thing to be adopted is the completely pure, that which is without focus, for there to be no ultimate truth would also be inappropriate. So what is the main thing we have to adopt out of all of the virtuous actions? It's our ability to realize that which is completely pure, that which is without conceptual focus. And so that's why we need the ultimate truth too. Therefore, there are not less than two. So that's why there have to be these two. But furthermore, since just these two accomplish the entire benefit of beings, more are not necessary. So we don't need any more than that. Alternatively, in terms of the mind that is the subject, there are definitely two ways of apprehending reality, a confused way and an unconfused way. And since it would be inappropriate not to have a presentation of the relative truth based upon the former, on the confused way, and of the ultimate truth based upon the latter, the unconfused way, there are definitely two truths.
Yepa, Tenye dang yin le namba drova yinbe, jikba da ta teba gangdo yang yudu mido, xie songba tar. Ma jeba ngor tanyi zangdo denba ni rang yin jikla dokba ta teba dang. Tong dambar ngo jikba dang ta de gangdo yang yudu mebar ye de. Teyang jik yin na seba namji kunzob ji denba tar, tong dambar denba am tokbe, Beba meba drover tarbiseta. Tendan yendo kunzov chan yeba meje number tabe joram. Kunzov yendo tendan yang yeba nazo bata. Kunjang numong, kunjang numong ban perwe mekbar tarbiser so chumang don jola. Ta tena nanjor ban namje. Tendan to jang kunzov la ngun yin bang munu bam. Tong tambate kunzov je chunye mayin batarwa so je nuzi mangdon yoko tiser gongderle. Dozi kandan tendam tinyi ne jigda tade jarvan tinyi de. Jigda tade nido kangdo ba teda tsuriye mayin yukbayin jie songso.
The next section looks at the question of whether or not the two truths are the same or different from each other. So it starts out with the root text, which says, conventionally, one nature and different reverses, ultimately inexpressible as same or different. And the commentary says, are the two truths the same or different from each other? Although there are the discordant assertions of the various tenets, the glorious Rangjung Dorje, the third Karmapa, states that as for the two truths that are explained in that way, like they've been explained before, like phenomena and pure being, they are liberated from being one thing or different things, and so they cannot be expressed as being either the same or the different. So, what does this mean? Well, the nature, what is the relationship between these two truths? The relationship is, according to the third Karmapa, that the relative truth are phenomena, just as they appear. And the ultimate truth is the true nature of these phenomena. And so we have these two things. In Tibetan, it's chur means phenomena, and chur nyi means the true nature, the pure being. And so that you can't say that they're the same thing, because they're not, but you can't say they're different, because they're not different either. And in accordance with that statement, when not analyzed and merely conventionally, the two truths are held to be the same in nature, but different reverses. So what does that mean? Well, it means that, like, if you snap your finger, then that finger snap you can describe in different ways. You can say it's a sound, you can say it's produced by causes and conditions, you can say it's impermanent. These are all different reverses. These are all different qualities of the sound in the way that they appear to thought. But in fact, they're all in that instant of the sound, they're all the same. They're undifferentiable. These qualities can't be distinguished from each other. And so the two truths conventionally are said to be the same way. In essence, they're the same, but to thought, they appear to be some different things. But ultimately, when we analyzed, they are held to be inexpressible as being either the same or different. So really, if we analyze, we can't say that they're the same, we can't say that they're different. Because if the two truths were the same, then it would absurdly follow that just as the immature perceive the relative truth, so they would also realize the ultimate truth, whereby they would be liberated without effort. So if these two truths were the same, then when we saw the relative truth, we'd also see the ultimate truth. And that doesn't make any sense. It would also absurdly follow that, like the ultimate, the relative would have no divisions and would be the cause of the thoroughly pure, of nirvana. Or that, like the relative, the ultimate would have many divisions and would be the cause of the increase of disturbing emotions. So, in other words, if you say they're the same, then they have these, then their qualities become the same, and that just doesn't make any sense. But on the other hand, if you say that they're different, then it absurdly follows that yogis would realize the ultimate and yet be unable to abandon even gross attachment to the relative. So if they were completely different, if there were no connection, then realizing the ultimate truth would not help you get rid of the suffering of the relative truth. So there is this connection. They're related. They are phenomena and the true nature of phenomena. That is their nature. And if they were completely different, the ultimate would not be the pure being or the true nature of the relative. So there are many faults with saying they're different too. So conventionally we can say that they are one nature but different ways appearing to thought. But ultimately, that both saying that they're different and both saying that they're, and saying that they're the same, there are faults with both of those. So it says, and so therefore it says in the Sutra Unraveling the Intention, the nature of the composite realms and that of the ultimate is a nature that is free from same or and different. Is a nature that is free from same and different. Those who believe them to be merely the same or merely different have not engaged them in the proper way.
Yeah.
So Rinpoche says that he'll leave the explanation of the ways that the various tenets assert the two truths till tomorrow, because if we explain more then we'll all get really tired. Reasonings.
Gangi Chetan Jepa, that's one day in the Banjo, but Tinjin Jongan, somebody to Wang de la Sanda. Gang go to your million number day, Jimmy. Teda Kinney change it on some moment mean number two. Seba make you join our law into one jubit. When Jan Tom summoned the Tavayos a limit. Jeva Hibe, Jeva Hin, Jeva Hibe, Madame. Madame Yel and Joe Hibe Tambuchi Jantobal. Name me by you, my in Sava meeting never. Marek Jolly Hindu son Toma Winda number. Zojanajin Shiba Lonjo de Banam, Kanda number of Enyam to Yovi Yijamu, Nimon Dorje told your bomb Mazes Sibajan, gave a day Chioko Sona Hito, Sona Hilas on Tabachunitori. Tachanan Yamachin Doda.
So now we will read these together in English. I prostrate to the mighty one who has taught about dependent arising, the principle by which arisal and disintegration are abandoned. Those whose intelligence has gone beyond existence and non-existence, and who do not abide in any extremes, have realized the meaning of dependent arising, the profound and unobservable truth of emptiness. Those who see with their intelligence that existence is like a mirage and an illusion,
are not corrupted by believing in the extremes of earlier and late, by understanding arising disintegration is understood, by understanding disintegration impermanence is understood, by understanding impermanence the truth of the genuine Dharma is real. Without a stable focus or location, not remaining and without root, arisen totally as a result of ignorance, without beginning, middle, or end, without core, like a banana tree, like an unreal city in the sky, the suffering world, the lands of confusion, manifests in this way like an illusion. To those students in search of suchness, at first teachers should say everything exists. Then after they realize the meaning of this and abandon desire, they will gain perfect transcendence. Those who realize that all entities are dependently arisen, and just like a moon that appears in a pool of water, are neither true nor false, not carried away by philosophical dogma. Children are tricked by reflections because they take them to be real in the very same way because of their ignorance. Beings are imprisoned in the cages of their conceptual objects. Great ones who with the eyes of primordial awareness see that entities are just like reflections do not get caught in the mire of so-called objects. Immature are attached to form, the moderate are free from attachment to the sense of, and those endowed with supreme intelligence know the true nature of form, and by so knowing are liberated. The awful ocean of existence is filled with the tormenting snakes of the affliction. But those whose minds are not moved even by thoughts of voidness have safely crossed over its danger. By a virtue performed here, all beings perfect their accumulations of merit and wisdom. And from this merit and wisdom may they attain the twin dimensions of genuine enlightenment.
Yeah. Tenin de sang demba ni tonta de jarva kap so ranju dan tanjur ni ga tawan rao.
Lasa.
Kya kare?
Lasa.
De sang de ki de.
Lasa. So Rinpoche says that tomorrow when he explains the positions of the various tenets and how they assert the two truths, he will explain these verses in connection with that because they explain the view of the two middle way schools, the autonomy middle way school and the consequence middle way school. So now, if people have any questions, then please ask.
Yeah.
I just want to see if I understand this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
We start out with nothing, and then we analyze truth and emptiness of death, and we ultimately end up with nothing again. That's what we're doing.
That's start out with nothing?
And we analyze, and we're analyzing what is truth.
Uh-huh.
We're dissecting it apart, we're seeing what the schools are, but ultimately, when we come back to what is truth, it's the same as nothing again.
Well, you start out with nothing in the sense of not having any thoughts about, right.
And then ultimately we go through the analysis and then we end up with nothing but with knowledge.
Tene morangi jiwa dire. Tambo gotsupe kapsu. Nepa. Nepa. Marikpa.
Marikpa.
Tenpa nyigi kola namto yomare. Tene Touching Chepe Kapsu, Namto Mambo Shagira.
Denpa namjang pe kunzom namjang pe dendam. Namjang mayen pe dendam la sopa yanda pe kunzom yanda mayen pe kunzom namjang mambo shagire. Dene tartuk la namto tamche shigire.
Ore.
Di denpa rebe.
Denda wo yengro. Tangbo denpa ni ji yewa kanye yo mare mongba le. Mala ngo ma kibanda wo re. Dene denpa ni ji yewa kiba kapsa. Nāṅsār tāṅ nēṅsār jī yēvā sē yōṅ tā tēne kīrāp jī jē yōṅ bā kāp sō nāṅ tō māṅ bā jī gārē.
Nāsā.
Thār tō gōṅ tē nāṅ tō thāṅ jī lēn tē kō.
Nāsā. So Rinpoche says, yeah, it's kind of like that. You start out in just complete darkness. You have no idea of what relative truth might be, what ultimate truth might be. It's just like being in a dream and having no idea that you're dreaming. And then you analyze and you analyze and you do get all of these thoughts of, you know, this is the enumerated ultimate truth, the non-enumerated ultimate truth, and all these different kinds of distinctions between relative and ultimate. And that's good because that helps us understand, in a sense, that we are dreaming. But then finally we have to give up all of our concepts, because the ultimate, the true nature of reality is beyond all of them. So in the end we end up without any thoughts about things one way or the other.
Then nam do le tor so te thanjur uma thanjur be lo la yor chuni yang tuda re to ba tham je len de ba re yor chuni tuda yi be se na tene to den dan te bo lo yang yor par je ba me par je ba la so be lo yin jin dang tham je ke lo yin jin dang tham je le tor te yor chuni dan te bar dan da yurchen je lo yang chola chod lo ba yin de yin mi de chur ba kap so de ne to ni to ba tan ni da ba re.
So the way that concepts are given up, Rinpoche says, can be very well understood if we look at the view of the consequence middle way school, which says that the object, which is emptiness, is beyond being a conceptually elaborated phenomena. It's beyond being some object of our thought, like being something existent or non-existent or any type of thing which we can think of. And so since that is the true nature of this object that is really inexpressible or inconceivable, this emptiness, then in concordance with that, in harmony with that, the subject doesn't have any thoughts of this exists or it doesn't exist. The subject which directly perceives this inconceivable object isn't conceiving anything. And so the realization of this, according to this school, is said to be like pouring water into water. And so the mind that is said to have realized this, that is said to have merged like this water being poured into water, is said to have realized emptiness. It's like that.
Then, yeah, kando. Come here.
I have a question about, we have to go through this process of analysis because the tendency of the mind is to analyze, so we have to work through that.
Then, takshing jepa galchenbore di kyumsan karares bakcha ngatsu gi bakchak la tene ngatsu takshing jela gagi do di kyumsan rebe
takye de
re takche gi gobe kyumsan karares
takye gobe kyumsan de don tam ba dem ba gom ba la takye matang na tenda hako gumare higamare Tenda mahi na tene gom higamare. Tise na mala takye tangore.
Hakusan. The reason why we need to analyze is because if we want to meditate on the ultimate truth, we need to know what the ultimate truth is. And if we don't know what the ultimate truth is, we can't meditate on it. So that's why we need to analyze to determine, prior to meditating on the ultimate truth, we need to determine what is the ultimate truth.
Jitan gom japa kapsa tangbu hirap jitak ye tang te nihi nyepa nganda nyambar yeba luksur tang tak ye matang bar tangbu sem ramvap du ya hine gom ramvap du ya te ramvap du nepe jisa tini yang ne lo la ta ke ta lo so ni ye ba re ta ta ngbo te la ta tho ne gom ba so ba si ga do ta we ngi ki ni te ne gom ja ba re na so ne ba ta ngbo gom ja ki ne gom ram ba du ya te ne ta ba tin le ba re gom tho ne ta ba so ba se ta ngbo te gom tho ne ta ba so ba te thoma ma ba ni ying ne thor de ba re ying de ying hin thor ba te ta ngbo he chi ne ram ba du ya sem he ne ya bu chung ka so
所以，there are generally two ways of approaching this, Rinpoche says. The first is that what you do is you gain some degree of certainty about the ultimate truth through analysis. And then you rest your mind in that certainty. So that's one way of approaching it. The other way is that first you start out by resting your mind just in its own nature, in its own place, just letting the mind settle, and then proceeding to investigate and gain certainty. And so that, in a sense, is like the analogy of the candle, and that the candle, which is blown about too much by the wind, the flame doesn't stay steady. But if you allow, if you guard the candle with like glass and protect it from the wind, then it burns very clearly. And so similarly, by the second approach, first we calm the mind down and then we proceed to analyze. But in both, we still need to gain certainty about the view, gain certainty about what is this ultimate truth about which we want to meditate.
Rinpoche, last night you mentioned prophecy of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Then
Lung Tenbe
Korla. Lung Tenbe Korla, the Kolo Sumba. Lung Tenbe Korla, say you do. Then Lung Tenba.
Long temba te jarse long temba tekpa chimbi lo la sanju samba te so maung bu te so karpa data bla cheran sanje data bur jorte khon data bu de temba data bu ne gi se tundu long te to go yo bare te la ko yin sa
so Rinpoche says that it's just when in according to the Mahayana tradition a bodhisattva when they reach a certain stage of realization, the Buddha gives them a prophecy saying that in this eon, in this kalpa, you will attain Buddhahood and your Buddha name will be this.
It's like that. Oh yeah.
So Rinpoche says that if people have further questions, then tomorrow there'll also be time to ask. Now we'll do a little meditation. So Rinpoche asks that first we analyze outer and inner phenomena and see how it is that, for example, they don't exist as either one thing or as many things, that they have no inherent substance to them, no core to them, that they are just empty like the sky, like space, and then rest in that certainty. This is the meditation primarily as explained by the Middle Way Autonomy School.
He hirap ji che de gaza ka bu hyor de che yang ma do pa. Che yang ma ba che yang ma do pa. Tong sang ni ne ba na ya ko.
After analyzing, we rest in the natural result of our analysis, which is just nothingness, not finding anything one way or the other. We just rest in that expanse, openness. We just rest relaxedly.
Tene tong sangeva, tong jang nam katawa, tong sangeva ti, zindang, zindang mayikpa.
What this means is this emptiness like space is that we're just not thinking anything one way or the other. We've given up our thoughts about saying it's one, it's existent or non-existent or anything like that. We just rest the mind in an openness like space. So Rinpoche says that the Buddha in the sutras says that meditation on emptiness is like meditation on space, or meditation on the sky. So Rinpoche wants us to recite what he just recited in as dedication of merit in Tibetan is this very same last verse on our sheet. It comes from this text by Nagarjuna, and it carries with it the great blessing of Nagarjuna, and so we should recite it three times. By the power of the virtue performed here, may all beings perfect their accumulations of merit and wisdom, and from this merit and wisdom may they attain the twin dimensions of genuine enlightenment. By the power of the virtue performed here, may all beings perfect their accumulation of merit and wisdom, and from this merit and wisdom may they attain the twin dimensions of genuine enlightenment. By the power of the virtue performed here, may all beings perfect their accumulation of merit and wisdom, and from this merit and wisdom may they attain the twin dimensions of genuine enlightenment.
The Nerekpa Tukchoba Tsikete, so Indikelam sang Mangbolo and Yapoyere. They sang the Hills Over Cups or Kolawajer.
No, sir. So Rinpoche says it's good if you read over these verses a little bit before coming to the teaching so that then when he explains them, they'll be easier to understand.
Yeah.